was the big news of the year in your community? It's time for one long look back at 2013 before we turn the page. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. We do this show every year looking at what our idea was of the big stories of the year. Was 2013 unlucky for you? I'm Steve Heimel. If your list is ready, the phones are open. 1-800-478-2554-78-TALK. A local call on Anchorage 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. Often it's the stories we forget that turn out to be most important. What were they on Talk of Alaska statewide?
Today's program is underwritten in part by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
And by
Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, here we are once again, ending another year, another news year. And when I was first thinking about it, is this exercise even worth doing this year? I mean, there was so little that happened in the past year. Then I started going over the list, and pretty soon I got it up to 10, and then I got it up to 17 or 18. And I just went through the whole year, and, you know, there's a couple that I'd missed that I put up there, and I made my list. And I've invited Tony Hopfinger here, too. He's editor at the Alaska Dispatch. And the reason for that is that both of our organizations try to have a statewide reach. You know, we're both kind of based in Anchorage, but nonetheless, try to have a statewide reach and look at what's going on from the perspective of the entire state. And if you were to name the top story of the year of 2013, Tony Hopfinger, what would it be?
I think it would be the oil tax and the fact that it finally, after several years of trying to get the oil tax lowered, they finally achieved that, only because the state depends so much on revenue from the oil industry.
Yeah, it's one of those stories that has a whole lot of dimensions, as you know, because you actually are co-author of a book that kind of looked at the the Corrupt Bastards Club and the whole deal and how the oil tax was set up and then changed under the Palin administration. And now that tax has again been changed under the Parnell administration.
Yeah, and it actually seems, as I'm thinking about it continues to be almost the same story almost every year as either the fight over it.
Oh, you can go back to statehood and it was like that.
Right, exactly.
It's always about, well, are they just taking the resources and we're not getting anything? And there's always the contest. What about the jobs?
Right, and then the larger issue being so dependent on one industry and for our tax base as well.
And we continue to be. But there's also, this story is maybe not done. In fact, as you have noted, it's hard to say exactly when it started, and it may be hard to say when it ends, because now there's a referendum.
Right, and the primary election in 2014 that'll be coming up, there'll be a repeal effort for this to revert SB 21.
So there's going to be a bunch of money spent campaigning on that at the same time that there's going to be all sorts of other campaigning going on.
Right, and it probably will be latched up with various people's political careers and re-elections, et cetera.
Yeah.
I heard somewhere about $10 million is going to be spent on both sides with SB 21.
Wow.
And the repeal effort.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so
that'll be good for the media.
So far, it's 10 to 1. The people that are fighting the repeal have 10 times as much money as the people that are campaigning for the referendum.
It'll be interesting to see how much the oil companies themselves come out.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and who else does.
Mm-hmm.
Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. The guest is Tony Hopfinger, editor of the Alaska Dispatch. And we're talking about the big news stories of 2013, and it's just a big pile on. You're free to call up with whatever it is that looks like the biggest news to you. We have our ideas, but often the listeners have very different ideas. And there's always those sleeper stories that we didn't even think of that then maybe you go back and look and say, wow, that was quite important. You know, I know I personally got really worked up about how the Arctic Ocean and the Beaufort Gyre all broke up you know, which basically started in like January in the middle of winter. Nobody'd ever seen it before. And this is probably important, but nobody quite knows why it happened or what it means or anything. It just happened, and there it was.
Right.
And we have another one of those this year, which I did include in the biggest stories, and that is the walrus harvest failure at St. Lawrence Island, which I know your writers have been working on too.
Right. That was a big one back in, I believe it was September. And then, of course, they were able to get a couple bowhead, which helped out, but that was very unusual.
Yeah, well, it's very odd because the reason they couldn't get go for the walrus is because the it wasn't freezing up in a way that they were used to. They couldn't, the ice was not trustworthy. And so when you had a similar thing happen in the Barrow area for the fall bowhead whaling, they couldn't get out. It was the spring.
Spring whale hunt, yeah.
Yeah. And so they, you know, this is an island in the middle of the Bering Sea we're talking about, St. Lawrence, two communities, Gamble, Savunga. And one of their biggest sources of income, maybe their biggest source of income, is the selling stuff that they make from the walrus ivory.
Right.
Not to mention that they also, it's a subsistence harvest. They use the meat, they use the hide. And suddenly to have their harvest, you know, unable to get near the number of walrus that they usually do is like an immense disaster, but it's also an immense disaster in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and then seeing the walrus haul out in other places along the upper reaches of Russia and Siberia and on the Alaska side too, thousands and thousands of walrus. The changing ice conditions are certainly something that is changing life up there.
Yeah, in many, many different ways. So anyway, I'm going to go down. I figured out a top 10 and see what you think of it. Very early in the year, Shell Oil, this Arctic exploration plan.
A year from today, yeah.
ran aground. and you know, the Kulik, you know, literally ran aground, Sitkalitik Island, and there has been endless probes, and the real cause, you can name five or six things, but it appears that they could have had better winches that would have kept this from happening, and they just simply didn't spend the money. But even beyond that, there are many questions about this, and what it did is it just threw a monkey wrench into the whole political process of getting offshore drilling going in the Arctic.
Even though this didn't happen in the Arctic.
Yeah. it showed how much can you trust.
If you can't transport your equipment, yeah. You know, on the off season, how can you trust in the Arctic? Yeah,
and it put the Obama administration over a terrible barrel because they were favorably disposed towards approving this, and all of a sudden Shell making it very difficult for them.
Now Shell does say they're going to be coming back in the Chukchi next year, but
right, and ConocoPhillips, yes,
yeah,
so. That's another one that's going to continue. But still, it's a huge story. I mean, to have a massive oil rig suddenly coming adrift and hitting an island in Alaska. And then some saying, well, it's kind of a success story because there really wasn't much of a spill involved with it. That's true.
I think there was also the question of whether they were trying to save some money on taxes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was, yeah. You can't dodge that one either. You know, the possibility, well, if they'd have left it here, they would have had to pay taxes maybe on it the whole time that it was here. True. So there was the continuing, you could take it from any angle you want, of affordable care. It's a national story, but important in Alaska because of a number of different implications, including the size of our health insurance pool in Alaska that would have been influenced if the governor had okayed the expansion of Medicaid, which he did not. So that has to make the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
The killing of VPSO Tom Madol in Manicotic. And here's a man that is a minister and also a VPSO. He is literally coming home from the airport and he gets a call to try and intervene in somebody's home. And the guy shoots him and kills him. And it just like struck the hearts of all Alaskans. And there's now a move afoot to set the conditions in place for arming VPSOs because right now they can't have guns.
Right.
But they can't be armed as VPSOs.
And there was that federal report that came out in the last 6 weeks or so that talked about some of the conditions in rural Alaska as well, and how the state has been letting down, maybe not living up to its commitments and providing safe communities.
Yeah. Yep. That one made my list for sure. The Tribal Law and Order Commission. 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. We're talking about the big news of 2013, and the email is talk@alaskapublic.org. And your call is welcome. The other voice you hear is Tony Hopfinger of the Alaska Dispatch. He's one of the founders of the Alaska Dispatch. And it's an interesting exercise to do an only online publication. But it's still going.
Yes.
Yeah. It's still going. And there's a focus not just, I think, on in your publication, not just on statewide, but also region-wide, because you probably read more about the Arctic there than you do in any other publication I know of in Alaska.
It seems something natural when we started it up to provide a menu item on the site for Arctic news, just given that we're the only Arctic state with the country. And it's a big commitment that our other owner, Alice Rogoff, has.
Yeah. And she's convinced there's fortunes to be made there. And she's not the only one.
Well, I think she sees it as an opportunity to help the state and communities in Alaska to find new economies. I mean, whether we like it or not, there's going to be eventually shipping traffic through the Bering Strait. If we want a piece of that, do we want to have a port on our side as opposed to having a port on the Russian side? Things like that, I think she sees the opportunity to help some of the rural communities especially.
Yeah. Well, it seems so far that the military is probably the least myopic of all, and the Coast Guard less even than the military, because they actually have to deal with the practicalities of all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really have much in the way of funding or anything. They just have to make do with whatever they get. Like, there's no way the Coast Guard has the clout to get more icebreakers.
No.
So there's even a plan afoot now to get that this is not going to go anywhere, but to have the Navy build the
sure.
build the icebreakers for the Coast Guard. But the Navy, you know, is up there with their submarines under the ice and so forth. They just don't say anything.
Right. Yeah. And that's sort of the hangover of the Cold War. I mean, there were all sorts of installations along
right.
the Arctic coastline back in the day.
But I think we could... There's signs that if the state kicked in money, the port thing at Port Clarence or someplace in the Teller area would there might be some movement on that.
I think that's right. And there's also been talk of trying to get private investment as well.
Yeah, I think there almost has to be.
Yeah, there's no way. I don't think that the federal government will just build a port on its own at this point.
So along with you, I picked this Senate Bill 21, which would be your top story. And I added in the sinkings of tenders because of five different fishing tenders that sank and spilled.
I noticed that. You mentioned that. Yeah. So tell me more about that one.
Well, it's just crazy. I mean, they just kept piling up, and there was never an explanation for exactly why so many tenders were going aground. The worst one would be the Lone Star, which went aground off of Manicotic, very much in the news, and basically ruined their fishery. And got stuck in the mud, and they couldn't get it out. This went on for months.
Yeah.
So, you know, all those set netters and everything, this is their only commercial fishery, and they can't fish. So then they said, oh, well, okay, you can fish. Oh, now there's oil. No, you can't fish. So it's just a horrible situation. But, yeah, I would say starting in January, there were a pair of vessels. These were not tenders, but two fishing boats. The two vessels went... that sank one on top of the other in Jackaloff Bay over on the other side of Kachemak. And then from there we went to, let's see, there was the processing vessel that sank in Kodiak Harbor and spilled right in the harbor. Then we had a tender in Bristol Bay, the Lone Star, one in Whittier in July, Port Valdez in Petersburg, both, in August, and then in Alaska, we get a longliner going aground, and then another tender in October in Haines. To me, that rises it up to a top 10 story, and I don't know the reason for it. I've heard I've heard speculation that it might have to do with the kind of fishing hours and things like that, just more pressure on the crew when they were already to the
shorter window.
Or yeah, and that people just weren't getting enough sleep, or you know the. But I don't. Nobody's really investigated it. 1-800-478-8255 478-TALK is the telephone number. We're talking about the big news of 2013 and what you think it might have been. Tony Hoffinger is with me. I'm Steve Heimel, and I'm just going through a list of 10 of them that stick out the most for me. The there was a plane crash in Soldotna. It was a bear viewing plane, and it took the lives of everybody on the plane. It was a very experienced pilot. It was a Bieber, and you know, it obviously it was a massive plane crash.
It crashed right after takeoff.
Yeah, and still under investigation, not a good probable cause, but combined with several other plane crashes through the year, they all had a stall characteristic in common, whether it was a stall or not, something like a stall, but we've seen no real investigative work on that, as we've seen no real investigative work on the the tenders going under.
Well, we had a story yesterday about the number of plane crashes. There were a total of 89 aircraft accidents, and 14 of those were fatal, resulting in 35 deaths.
So that strikes me as high.
Right. It was the highest number of deaths since 1997.
So that there is, you know, whatever trend or cause you might want to put to it, there were a lot of them. We had a couple of ones that were like home-built or experimental or leased. Mm-hmm. You know, people not acquainted with Alaska conditions. One guy in particular I know that went into IFR and really didn't know where he was, crashed a plane. And the diagnosis on that one finally came out that it was kind of like a stall.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? So far we've had the Kulik, Senate Bill 21, Affordable Care, Tom Madol's death. Killed a VPSO, the tender sinkings, Soldotna plane crash, mining giants pull out of Pebble.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. We just had the news with Rio Tinto that they are likely to be pulling out pretty quick here. So I don't know where that really leaves Pebble at this point. No backer.
No, Northern Dynasty, well, these Canadian mining companies are like that. They get the mining claims and they try and promote a mine. And this one had some good political prospects for a while under the Murkowski administration. I mean, I think Murkowski did everything he could to try and hustle this project along in a very unabashed fashion, you know, including wiping out coastal zone management, you know, the local control over, you know, local approval of coastal projects. Among other things, permitting reform that is still underway.
Right.
And it was starting to look pretty good, but the local resistance kept growing and growing and growing. And now it's huge and adamant. And it would appear that the bad PR of it is what is scaring off the mining giants. They just don't want the bad PR.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I mean,
it's a bad investment.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and that falls again, I think, overall with the, when you look at just overall the economy of Alaska. So we take SB21 into account here, too, as having all our eggs in one basket with the oil industry and trying to find a way to diversify. Pebble was supposed to be this next prospect that would provide, I mean, it certainly wouldn't be like oil, but it would provide something. Jobs, primarily, you wouldn't get a lot off the tax, the mining tax. But it does make you wonder, what future does Alaska have? So if we're not going to have the mine, oil taxes, we're going to...
Well, there'll be other mines.
There might be other mines.
Scale, I think, is a question. Ambler is really pushing for Ambler, which would involve a very long road.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I mean, all these projects involve lots of infrastructure.
Yeah, and yeah. Donlin is a possibility in this Native Corporation venture.
Mm-hmm.
And their problem appears to be power and where the power would come from.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of huge hurdles.
Yeah. And now the price of gold's going down, which is sort of a dampening effect on the enthusiasm of the investment in mining.
Sure.
Yeah. So you have that Then we have our visitor industry, which sort of, you know, continues to kind of toddle along, doing not bad at all, growing a bit. Southeast is starting to grow after shrinking for years and years, result of the timber, you know, collapse. And they're starting to get going again a bit economically, a little growth there. And we see Holland America changing their strategy to move the visitors a little more quickly up to Dawson City by taking airplanes, which is not necessarily a good idea for the businesses on the road there. But I think where Alaska's economy is going, when you look, what besides energy would there be that would be big? There, it ain't.
I noticed on your list there wasn't anything with the natural gas pipeline, which must have been a first in the last 10, 12 years, huh?
Yeah, but, you know, it's sort of like gas line maybe, and that's what it always is every year, gas line maybe.
I know. And this year just didn't make the list. I mean, I think there's, at this point, real questions whether we're going to even bother with the large gas line anymore.
Parnell's
frustrated with the big three not making any movement on it. It doesn't sound like they're going to go ahead and do anything with the tax, the gas tax, until there's more quote-unquote progress. I'm not sure what that progress is.
So you're talking about the upcoming legislative session, that there just doesn't seem to be the will to try and put some bait out there to...
No, in the meantime, I think we're kind of going along with a bunch of small energy projects to try for domestic needs, but there's so many of them.
So in a sense, when you look over the news of the year, you could say, well, the gas line's a big issue, but you can't find any particular moment to say, okay, here's the story here. The closest I came was when they said, okay, well, it's not going to be Valdez, it's going to be Nikiski.
Right.
And that's kind of as close as I could get. And also, I think getting the right-of-way down the Parks Highway congressionally approved, that's probably quite important.
Yeah. Yeah. No, agreed. I mean, the sheer amount of money that would cost and the fact that LNG elsewhere is booming.
Okay. Well, the calls are starting to roll in, Tony. The telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. And Rand joins the program from Galena. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Rand, and I know what the top story had to be on your list.
Well, I guess you could. We can make that summation, but the reality of the top story is the spirit of resiliency and kindness that was shown to us after the fact. We've had people from all over the state of Alaska, in fact, all over the United States, come here and help us. I wanted to celebrate some good news because... The good news is, you know, yes, we did get pretty well wiped out, but through the efforts of people here, individuals and volunteers, and God bless those people in the big agencies and government organizations. I think on a level of them being individuals, they're trying to help, but they're clogged down with a lot of bureaucracy. And the reality of the situation is that we've had a lot of good people, Alaskans, our fellow brothers and sisters all over the state, Salvation Army, Alaska Moose Federation, people have helped us over and over again. And I think we need to celebrate the good news of what this state is like and what people in this state do when they see others hurting and needing a hand up. Not a handout, but a hand up.
Yeah, Rand, that's a great reminder. And maybe you can give us a little update on how things are as far as people's homes and cabins and so forth, being how secure they are for the winter.
I feel like they're as secure as they can be when this kind of interruption happens. I don't mean to be coy, but, for instance, on my own place, I've still got a few things that once the cold sets in, you go, oops, forgot that. You know, it's a little different when it's 50 degrees and then when it's 45 below. So I think we're all running. There's been several freeze-ups and stuff, but we continue to push forward and to strive. The event wasn't just a few days when it happened and afterwards, but like you say, the rebuilding. And I believe that we're a strong community, and we continue to push forward and try to come back stronger than ever. And I'm just, like I say, very encouraged by all those people who've helped us. So we're doing okay. You know, there's going to be a lot of bumps. It's a long road to recovery, and I don't mean to sound exclusive here, but once you've been through something like this, you kind of realize, oh, it takes a long time to really get things back to a sense of normal. But I feel like, you know, slowly but surely we're getting there. We're moving forward well. That's my perspective.
Yeah, well, you know, any Alaskan, especially rural Alaskan, he loses their contents of their freezer. They're way behind already.
and their wood pile. And remember, we didn't just rebuild our homes, but our schools, our churches, our businesses.
Yeah.
I mean, everything was pretty well. And so, you know, like I said, I don't want to sound the bell of crying, but the reality is that I honestly believe it will make us a stronger, more resilient community that realizes that the things that we come to depend very much upon, we need to diversify and find ways to make those things more sustainable and make ourselves more self-reliant. That's one of the things that has come out of this. We've had to accept help gracefully and graciously, but at the same time, we've realized, hey, you know something? Maybe I better figure out a way to put a little more away here, or find a better way to do this, or be more prepared. And it's taught us a lot about being ready, you know. So there are things that have come out of it, you know, those who would disagree with me, but there have been things come out of this that will be productive and helpful to us, I believe, as a community, and as an example to others as a way to try to rebuild when something like this terrible happens.
Love getting a call like that, Rand. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. We're talking the top news of 2013, and Galena flooding was certainly big news in Galena. Didn't quite get to my top 10, but it was in the nominees. And, you know, it's interesting that we also had Circle flooding twice, and we had Circle also flooded, come to think of it. But there was a huge effort to get that community back on its feet. And I think maybe that kind of set the pattern for how people responded to the Galena situation. But that was great to get that call from out there and just a little reminder. All right, let's go ahead and do this one here. This is Hollis, must be French, must be running for lieutenant governor as a Democrat, calling from Anchorage. Hollis, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Well, hi, Steve. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Hey, I was listening to your show this morning and heard that you were talking about the top stories. And from my perspective, there's nothing bigger than the SB 21 giveaway and then the quick turnaround by the citizens of the state to put the repeal question on the ballot. I just think that's going to set, you know, Alaska's, you know, economic climate and its fiscal policy for the next decade.
Yeah. Well, what would you? I was thinking about that because. If the referendum succeeds, on the one hand, you could say it's huge, you know, just politically huge. Here, the legislature gets a big slap in the face. But at the same time, as I understand it, doesn't a ballot measure, and you would probably know this as an attorney, doesn't a ballot measure only have effect for a couple, 3 years, and then the legislature
It's a referendum, and so it's a different than an initiative. A referendum is simply repealing a law on the books.
Oh, so they just have to try again.
You'd have to try again. And we offered, you know, reasonable oil tax reform, but that's not what they were interested in. Even as far back as 2011 and 2012, we were offering reasonable oil tax reform, but the people committed to a giveaway decided to wait for the results of the redistricting process. And you followed that closely. Your listeners followed it closely. The redistricting board took aim at six Democrats, and they got four Democrats. They got four out of those six, and in that process produced a Senate that would give away the farm on oil taxes by exactly one vote, right? It was an 11-9 vote in the state Senate.
And I got an email from Tom in Talkeetna who sort of echoed that. He mentioned gerrymandering. I guess he would agree with that, that was kind of a part of the S-21 story, really.
Oh, it was a huge part. I mean, when we started offering, you know, a fair oil tax reform bill and a compromise bill, you could see the Republicans in the legislature, most of them were turning away from that process. This is in 2012, and they said, let's wait for the results of the election. When the governor's special session in 2012 on oil taxes collapsed because they had no evidence that we needed to make a change, you could see the Republicans said, let's just wait for the elections coming up this November. And as I say, they took aim at six Democrats. They got four. They produced a Senate that gave away the farm in 2013. But I think, you know, the swift reaction by the people of the state, 45,000 people signing this petition within 90 days, speaks to their sort of latent sense that something wrong took place. And, you know, we offered over and over again to stimulate new production, to stimulate heavy oil, to stimulate, you know, viscous oil or shale oil. But you have to protect the treasure and the legacy fields of Prudhoe Bay, Kuparuk, and Alpine.
Obviously, you're telling us what the Democrats, who turned out to be a minority, were pushing for. But it wasn't just Democrats, as I understand it.
No. We were joined by Senator Bert Stedman from Sitka, you know, a rock rib conservative. Senator Gary Stevens from Kodiak, you know, another a good Republican from Kodiak. And so I think, you know, I think you saw the same result when 45,000 Alaskans stepped forward to sign the repeal effort. I don't think there's
all right. Well, how
Democrats
do you? How do you? Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. But this issue of discouraging investment, I mean, probably will be a central issue in this campaign coming up.
Oh, well, yes.
Over the referendum, what would be your answer to that? I mean,
if I were
an oil company looking to invest in Alaska. And here the voters are actually going to grab control. I mean, volatile.
It goes back to what they say of the uncertainty. So, yeah, Hollis, how do you respond to that?
Well, you know, first, I mean, there's several responses. One, we offered a fair, they were making a lot of money on ACEs, under ACEs. ConocoPhillips makes more money per barrel in Alaska than they make anywhere else on the earth, and that's from their own statements. So that's point number one. Point number two is, you know, we offered
So, in other words, they'd be fine, that you're saying.
Sure, they're fine, and I guess the last point is, you know, as to the uncertainty, it's just an inherent aspect of our system of government. No one gets a 20-year promise on anything. Every time the legislature sits down to do business, they have to look out for the state's interests. And I think if you look at the 50-year history, the state has been very, very gentle and very, very fair with the oil industry. The oil industry has enjoyed enormous profits here. We've mutually benefited from our relationship, and no one wants to disturb that. But under ACEs, they made lots of money. ACEs was a fair system to them. Investment went up every year. Jobs went up every year. And, you know, we needed to make some tweaks, but we didn't need to give away the farm.
All right, Hollis. Well, yeah,
thanks
go ahead, Tony.
I was going to say, one of the other stories that was...
Hi, Tony.
One of the other stories that was on the list was Pioneer and them selling their assets. Hollis, do you have any, you know, insight into that, of how, you know, an independent oil company that came up here a number of years ago, why they'd be pulling out now?
You know, that's a specific story that you'd want to have more details on, and that's been one of the, frankly, the hindering aspects on both sides, is the lack of information. Just one example on these new numbers they're coming out with enormously high expenses for last year, a story that your publication reported on, I think, just today, Tony, a good story about some of those numbers. You know, every month, the department gets information from oil and gas companies operating in the state that provide estimated monthly lease expenditures every month. So when we were debating SB 21 in January and February and March earlier this year, the department was getting those monthly filings. Who had them? Who knew about them? Why wasn't that information conveyed to us that suddenly there was this huge uptick in expenses? You know, there's just been this series of missteps on the part of the administration and mishandlings of information that I think led to the huge doubt and the cloud over SB 21 and led to 45,000 people jumping up to sign that petition.
All right, Hollis, thanks. Thanks for your input on this.
Have a good day, guys. Yep.
Yep. Well, definitely a partisan view of things, and opposing views are extremely welcome as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
Since 1978, the Older Persons Action Group has been the publisher of Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide newspaper for older Alaskans and their families. They now offer a digital version online at seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
It is Talk of Alaska. Our guest is Tony Hoffinger, editor of the Alaska Dispatch. Both APRN and Alaska Dispatch try to be statewide organizations, and it's great to talk to the people all across the state about assessing the big news of the past year. And I've gone through all of mine, which was the Kulik and Shell, the Affordable Care stuff and Medicaid expansion denied, the killing of VPSO Tom Madol, the sinkings of tenders all across the state in a bunch of different waters, five of them in all, Senate Bill 21 passing, changing the oil tax thing, and as Hollis French pointed out in his call just now, it's also a referendum issue, so this story continues into this year and probably into the foreseeable and unforeseeable future. The Soldotna plane crash, killing 10, mining giants pulling out of the Pebble Mine, Tribal Law and Order Commission saying law and order is kind of tied in with the Tom Madol killing, saying law and order just is not getting done out in the bush. You can't do it from the state government point of view. Need to pay more attention to the tribes. And the walrus harvest failure due to bad ice around St. Lawrence Island. And the one that I didn't ever get to was Marine Stewardship Council and salmon and Walmart and Sodexo. This is, you guys have been reporting on this one too, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting one of basically what the fish guy is saying, that they want to have their own standard.
Yeah, that's pretty much
and
it.
And less regulation, yeah.
Yeah, we've got our own standard. It's just as good. And in truth, I don't think anybody's saying that the management of salmon in Alaska is unsustainable. But nobody's ever bothering to look at why did the Marine Stewardship Council not do it. They're doing it. They're saying, well, it's just a matter of they're wanting all this money before they'll do it.
Right.
That's not what MSC says.
Right.
They say, well, we have legitimate questions here, and so we need to resolve this. And so I don't know how easily this is to be resolved in the future with Walmart and so forth, but for right now, it appears to be played as a power play by the Alaska delegation.
Yeah, the delegation's been back in it, and
yeah, and the idea that the seafood promotion people are saying we're going to have our own standards, we'll pay for it, and so forth, and just a few of the fishing interests who are saying, well, maybe we should try and work with MSC, but so far, I mean, if you were to make a list of the most unpopular entities in Alaska, they'd probably be even less popular than the federal government.
I was going to say the EPA.
Yeah, even less. Well, speaking of fish, let's go to Soldotna and Bob. Bob, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Good morning and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Bob.
Yeah, a lot of issues. I just listened. I was one of those 45,000 Alaskans that signed that petition and also gathered signatures for repeal of SB 21. Another one that's going to be on the horizon is HB 77, which was passed in the House and will be up for vote in the Senate this year.
Well, I don't know. I don't think it's going to get out of rules, to tell you the truth. I think Michiki got scared off really big time.
Well, that's another thing. You know, our Senator Michiki, he holds two high-level positions with ConocoPhillips, and he admits that, but, you know, well, anyway, on to fish wars. You know, never in my lifetime, growing up in Alaska for the last 54 years, I would ever think that it would come to this, where all these political factions down here in the Kenai would be fighting against each other for who gets fish, who, you know, personal use, sport fishing, commercial fishing. You know, it's just become a nightmare. And, you know, they want to ban set nets. And, you know, everybody's fighting amongst themselves, all these political factions, and they've all got money behind them. But, you know, it's just a sad thing. It makes my heart sad to see it's come to this.
Well, I mean, how do you feel about the idea of going to the voters to try and ban set netting? It would seem like that would be in the jurisdiction of the board, wouldn't mm-hmm. you think?
Yeah. Well, as to the voters, I don't know. I'm not a commercial fisherman. I've always been a sports fisherman. You know, uh-huh. I like to go out and catch my fish on a pole. But, you know, a lot of people make their livelihood from set netting. But, you know, you go down, say, Clam Gulch on down in the summertime and look down there, and all those as far as you can see to the north and south, your sand nets along the beaches just staggered in masses to the point where you don't think anything can swim or crawl.
But not very much in the last 2 years, Bob.
Well, you know,
we had no fishing at all this year.
Yeah, I didn't even take my pole down this year. it's getting harder to even find a place. I have some friends that have home on the river here, and I go over there and fish when I can. But, you know, those folks were out of a lot of livelihood.
I really appreciate you calling up and talking about just your complete despair at that. I mean, that's what I'm hearing. It's just kind of like with our caller from Galena saying, wow, man, we really pulled together. And you're saying, boy, what a mess we got here.
Well, you know, and you mentioned that plane crash here.
Yeah.
You know, as a matter of fact, I was going over to my friend's house. It lived just past the airport just before that happened. The FAA still hasn't come out with
the probable cause, no.
The probable cause and what that was, but those are supposed to be one of the safest aircraft to fly, especially in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. I love those beavers, but they are, so you have to know how to fly them. This guy knew how to fly them.
Yeah. And it was very calm, very nice. It was a good day that day, too. We didn't have a lot of wind. It wasn't raining. I think it might have been a little cloudy, but been a while ago. While back ago, but SB-21. I followed those debates in the Senate and the House over that, and in committees. You know, when the legislature's in session, it's like having it's like having a football game on to me. You know, and I don't get the popcorn and beer out, but I called around. You know, and asked, has there been any audits done? And no, the governor wouldn't call for an audit before they were voted on this.
Yeah.
You know, and I was very proud of Mr. Stedman and the other Republicans standing up. That takes a lot of guts to go against your own party like that.
All right, Bob from Soldotna, thanks a lot for your call.
Okay, Happy New Year to you, Steve.
All right, Happy New Year. And Robert in Fairbanks, welcome to Talk of Alaska, Robert.
Hello. Thanks, gentlemen. My issue is with Fairbanks and North Pole consistently recording the worst air quality in the country. Thank you.
Yeah, that was definitely among the nominees that I had. And Robert, part of the story, it's hard to say exactly where the bite is in this story, but I mean, when people... What we had last year was we actually had, you know, they had to send people home from school and stuff like that. I mean, we had definitely like a tangible health impacts from those boilers. Okay, Robert's gone. But, yeah, we all agree. It's a big story, Fairbanks. Air quality, inversions, stoves that put out a lot of smoke.
And trying to provide power for the long term.
But, yeah, well, people really needing to heat their homes and finding all sources of energy for their homes very expensive. So wood is all that's left, and feeling, you know, so trapped by that we saw a voter initiative that took away the enforcement power from the borough.
Mm-hmm.
And so the state had to step in, and that's what happened this year. The state stepped in and reached agreements, enforcement agreements, with some of those boiler owners, but... We're still getting fine particulate problems in North Pole.
Yeah.
So it's one of those ongoing things. Thanks for that call from Fairbanks. Matt joins the program from Sitka.
Hey, good morning and a happy new year, and thanks for taking the call.
Happy new year.
Boy, you guys have got so many issues already on the plate, SB-21 and MSC. I'm a fisherman. But the thing I was calling about specifically that I don't think you've mentioned is the governor's budget, which came out, of course, recently, and it was quite a blow to my community in Sitka, Alaska, and Southeast Alaska. We don't have roads down here. I can't get to the state capital. Well, nobody can get to the state capital by road from Southeast. I guess you can't get to the state capital by road anyway. You have to take a ferry or fly. So ferry systems are really important down here. And here in Sitka, we have this, I think, overambitious, but nevertheless stuck with a hydro project, the Blue Lake Hydro Project, $147 million project for this little town of Sitka. And we were looking for, you know, some funding in this budget from the state, and the governor offers nothing for the Blue Lake project. And I don't remember the numbers on the ferry, but it wasn't much there. It's a lot of people in the rest of the state, I think, maybe I'm wrong about this, think that ferries are kind of a luxury for us down here. They're not a luxury. They're our road. And we absolutely need it for our economic development. I just want to say one thing about MSC. MSC, that's a branding issue. MSC kind of owns the European market. But MSC, the Marine Stewardship Council, has given their seal of approval to the fish that go into McDonald's fish witches in all of Europe. And if you dig down, tunnel down a little bit into what MSC is doing, I really do think it's kind of a backsheesh. It's give us the money or you don't get our thing. And the money went so high here for the state of Alaska that you really have to think twice, especially if you, I don't want my fish branded with the same brand that goes into fish witches in Europe. But that's not what I call about. The governor's budget, I think, is a big issue. An ongoing issue. We have to see what the legislature does, but boy, we could sure use some relief for our ferry system down here, and could sure use something for the hydro project, which
well, if you'd only elected a Republican, Matt.
We got Bert, thank God.
Oh, you did, didn't you?
Yeah, but, I voted for Bert.
But he doesn't count. He's the minority.
He is? I thought he was a Republican.
He is still in the minority, isn't he?
I know, yeah. I know. But we love Bert down here. He does his best for the region that he can, and it seems to be. And here's another issue. It's part of the same thing. There seems to be this growing rural urban divide in Alaska, and it's basically the rail belt that controls the legislature, and the vast majority of the space and the rural population of Alaska is in dire straits. We really need the ferries down here in Southeast Alaska. We really absolutely do. It's not a luxury in any way. It's absolutely essential.
Yeah, and it's been a kind of a mess. Yeah.
It is. And I don't know. I thank God for Bert, but you know, Bert, how did he put it? He says it's not a turkey in the pot. It's more like a Cornish game hen. And you can see this sinking,
I love that.
Revenues.
That's almost as good as backsheesh, man.
Well, Happy New Year. Thanks for doing the show. I have to go see my daughter who's in from London. I don't have to. I want to. And
excellent.
She's down. I'm off the road system. She's waiting for me. So
okay.
Happy New Year.
Get down to it, Matt. Yeah, thanks for the call. 1-800-478-8255. 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org, and this from Tom by email. You mentioned Parnell's not allowing the Medicaid expansion, not that the lack of regular health care for those who would be eligible would allow up to a dozen Alaskans to continue to die a year. Death panels, he says. There it is. Thanks for that, Tom, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Providence Imaging Center, with Drs. Scott Nespinski and Christopher Reed, providing interpretations of imaging studies with a focus on musculoskeletal radiology. provimaging.com.
It's Talk of Alaska, and we're talking about the big stories of 2013. It's starting to become the big issues of 2013. I'm with Tony Hopfinger, the editor of the Alaska Dispatch, and Tony, you were talking about how Senate Bill 21, which is definitely one of the big stories, is kind of related to the diversification or non-diversification of Alaska's economy, along with the Pebble Mine story. We get input from Tim Ellis at KUAC saying, the military is expanding its presence in Alaska, and it's worth noting.
Well, that was kind of interesting. I mean, it was a turnaround for the interior.
Yeah.
Ready to lose the F-16s.
Right, and they have that the training area, which they increased, allowing four drones and, you know, the fancy new vehicles they have and everything, testing all that stuff in Alaska. It is, you know, there will be more activity. At the same time, Secretary Hagel is bound and determined to reduce forces.
Sure, sure. They also announced the more interceptors, too, for the missile defense.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's you can't be dependent on the federal government or the military for your economy.
Yeah, but it is a big spoke. Often it doesn't get included in the pie chart of the economy, but it's a big part.
Oh, yeah, and in pre-statehood it was huge.
Yep. 1-800-478-8255, and Richard joins the program from Nome. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Richard.
Good morning. Happy New Year a few hours early to you guys. Hey, you know, and then you had, what a list. I mean, you hit every topic, and I sit on the, I'm happy to sit on the, proud to sit on the state chamber board, and I hear all of these things. But I live out here in Western Alaska, and sometimes we kind of slow things down a little bit and take a longer view at things. And I wanted to mention a story that so many of your stories are related to as far as top stories, and that's climate change and the role of Alaska and Alaska's position both nationally and internationally in this future that is happening just about 90 miles to the west of where I'm speaking from. And I'm looking at the frozen Bering Sea now as the sun's beginning to come up, and it's incredibly important. And to, I got to respect, and I'm a bleeding heart liberal Democrat, sorry guys, but Mead Treadwell, who's done such a wonderful job keeping Alaska and the in the forefront of the, you're being with the Council of the North, and I think we really need to keep that eye open. We defer so much to the oil company because they're so critically important to our total economy, but you know, there's transportation, there's other stuff happening. Anyway.
Yeah, you know, and then, you know, what else is what else is happening is China, Richard.
Yep.
China and Chinese presence in the Arctic. I think it's a very significant that the Arctic Council has given observer status to India, Italy, China, Japan, Korea. They're doing that because...
You're very right in that.
Yeah.
You're very right in that. But that doesn't mean that you don't play. And that's why I think it's equally as important, because I agree with you that it seems it's rather pointless. Until you think about that those countries, too, are using the transportation routes, Russia's largest transport company, Sea Shipping, has opened it up year-round. They never did that officially before. So whether the Chinese should be playing or not is irrelevant to the fact that they are.
They are.
I think that's
I agree with you. I don't think that's particularly right. But they are playing in it, so we've got to be aware that's incredibly important. And I'm proud of Mead and the government, the administration by and large, staying active. And tourism too. I own a tour company. It's incredible the increase in business from New Zealand.
Oh, so well, that's interesting to hear.
More cruise ships.
Yeah.
Oh yes. Oh, big time. The 30% increase in traffic to the Bering Strait in the next 3 years, and it's up about 100% from where it was 5 years ago, which being 100% of nothing is nothing. But that's not true, and I sit here and watch it all summer long.
Yeah. We were seeing last year's increase was a lot of more research vessel traffic and oil company traffic, but you can't say that about this year. It's just more traffic. Yeah.
And if you look down the road 10, 15, even 20 years, if it's cheaper and you can save 10,000 miles to come from Hamburg to go to Seoul, guess what you got to do? You got to go through the Bering Strait. I'm not saying that it's all good news.
No,
but I respect the native people and their rights to their, and it's very, very difficult. But another thought, here once again, we have, you know, we voted down a reestablishment of the coastal management, primarily, as I understand it, because it allowed a committee of people, local residents, to have say. We can't keep doing that, Alaska. We got to include the bush. Oftentimes try to exclude it.
Thank you, Richard. You're the second one to bring up rural-urban schism and We're seeing it. Tony's nodding his head. Jim joins the program from Mat-Su. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jim.
Happy New Year, Steve. Jim Culver, Mat-Su Assembly Member out here in Mat-Su.
Happy New Year.
One of our big issues, Steve, we talk about fish and sustainability of the Susitna runs. I think you used to be in Talkeetna area, didn't you?
Yep.
Yeah, we've had issues with the kings, the reds, silvers, just not coming back to historic escapement levels. And so we've been working really hard through the process to try to get those wild runs reestablished. And that's a huge issue for us, having a huge economic hit to our small businesses, the guides and tackle shops and lodges.
And what do you think? What do you think? I mean,
well, what we're working on with the Mat-Su Borough Fish and Wildlife Commission is trying to get some good, solid research, genetic research, identifying what fish are being caught in the lower inlet.
Oh yeah, so it's a mixed stock issue. Yeah, I got you there. And there's also the at-sea survival of Chinooks, just all the Chinook runs in the state.
Exactly, we have a statewide issue with Chinooks, obviously.
Yeah.
But more importantly, we need more of a targeted fishery like Bristol Bay in the Cook Inlet so that northern-bound fish are able to get through.
Hmm.
And so we're working towards that end. But, you know, everybody, fish wars are difficult. But I do not support that set netting ban. I think that's too draconian of a measure, pitting one Alaskan against another. I don't think that's going to go anywhere.
All right, Jim, thank you.
Take care.
Thanks for your call, Jim Culver from out of Mat-Su. Tony Hoffinger, we only got a minute left, so you've got one that we missed that maybe we should bring up. I know Dave Bettinger brought one up and saying, well, there was the...
Should we end on Don Young? And
why not? Yeah, Dave brought up about the Tag Toll, Mel Nading, and Carl Ober all killed in the state trooper helicopter crash.
Yeah, that was a big one.
It was a pretty bad one, but Don Young saying wetbacks, that was kind of big, too.
Yeah.
Or not big, I don't know.
I don't know.
He's done this sort of thing before.
That's what I was going to say. He probably makes the list every year.
It blew over. So there's two of them waiting with the Anchorage issues that are coming in over the phone. We're not going to have time to get to either one of them unless Garrett called up and wanted to talk about the legislative building expansion, which is going on now in downtown Anchorage. And Tony in Anchorage wanted to talk about the tennis courts.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very interesting Anchorage issue, and the political fortunes of Mayor Dan Sullivan generally been kind of an interesting issue this past year, I'd have to say.
Yeah.
Well, Tony, thank you so much for coming in. And
thanks for having me.
Sitting across from me as we kind of kick these things around one last time. Maybe we can do it again next year.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, I want to thank Monica Gokey here for working the phones, and Dave Waldron at the controls. I'm Steve Heim. We'll see you next year.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. And by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.